Testing is now over, and it's time to get serious as we head into the new era of Formula One. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. This is episode 173, and today we're going to be discussing the final preseason test in Bahrain and looking ahead to the 2022 season. Today, I am joined by Aaron Harper from the Five Red Lights podcast.
Hello.
Tom Downey from the Everything F1 podcast.
Hello.
And engineering master, Jack Watson.
Hello.
Yeah, we started with that years. It feels like years ago, Jack. We're not getting rid of it. So, yeah, we've had three more days of testing, this time broadcast and actually shown, so we could actually see what was going on, which was nice. And Aaron, I'm going to start with you and your favourite team, Mercedes. It's been a strange test for Mercedes because while the drivers keep saying, yes, we're quick, it's quite obvious that Mercedes are quick, but the drivers are saying, we're not as quick as Ferrari, we're not as quick as Red Bull. Lewis even saying that they may not even be competing for wins this year. How much of that do you actually believe? Or do you think this is just what Mercedes do, say that everyone's faster and then come out and beat everyone by a second when we get to Bahrain?
I don't believe any of it because, first of all, the primary caveat to any of this is that testing is notorious for being misleading. I mean, Prost ran underweight all those years ago in a bid to get sponsors and they looked like the real deal. With Mercedes, I think it's just them playing down expectations. Everyone is expecting them to come out with the best car. Everyone expects them to be constructors' champions again because we're just so used to it. We're so used to them delivering on the track. As for not fighting for wins straight away, I mean, that's a real possibility because if their porpoising issues are continuing and they haven't quite got on top of it, then that might restrict how well they can run their car. And the car obviously is fast. I mean, it's got less drag because it's got no side pods. I mean, that's a good start. And that's definitely caught the eye. And they've ran reliably. They've done some really good long runs. They actually did the most laps in Bahrain on 384. But actually, to me, it looks like they've created a bit of another diva in that it has a very precise operating window, considering the porpoising issues that they've got. So if they can't get the maximum out of it, it's going to be when they arrive at a track that doesn't exacerbate the porpoising problem until they've got on top of it, or one that just maybe suits their car's handling style, which I think we're going to see with quite a few teams. Their fastest lap was about a second slower than the fastest lap overall of the test. So I didn't see Mercedes do a performance run, like a low fuel lap, like some others did. So I'm not quite sure. I think they know what they're doing. I'd hope so. You don't win 8 constructors' titles by accident. But they definitely haven't shown their full hand yet. And I don't think we will see it. Maybe not even in Bahrain, because they might not be able to, which, you know, potentially bodes well for the rest of the season, because at least they'll be coming through and there'll be that sort of chase through the season.
Yeah, it's definitely mysterious what's going on at Mercedes. And Jack, I was going to come to you next to talk about some of the sort of the more engineering side with the fact that Aaron mentioned, you know, the fact that Mercedes have turned up to this test with a radically different side pod or lack thereof of side pods design that they've gone. And yeah, and they seem to be one of the teams that still haven't managed to sort of really sort out their porpoising problems. You see it going down the main straight in Bahrain and you wonder how either Lewis or George have any teeth left.
You're absolutely right there. They're getting a ride of their life in that car. They are struggling somewhat with that balance. A lot of teams, to be fair, do seem to be, but it does seem to have persisted with Mercedes. The side pod design seems to be trying to help with sealing of the underfloor itself. They've got a lot of floor surface area to play with, whereas others have blocked it off with side pods going for undercuts, like we've seen in Red Bull, and we'll get to them later. If Mercedes can get on top of this, then we know where they're going to be. There's no question, shadow of a doubt, that they will not be competitive. But it's just going to take a bit of time to get on top of it. It's a very new concept for everybody. And having been in the championship fight, they would have naturally not had, well, they have the resources, but they are still kind of restricted themselves, being pushing all the way through to last year. Whereas others, as we've seen, have made better use of their slim, a limited amount of time. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this one progresses. They may struggle in Bahrain. They may not get that win, as Lewis has been saying. But I don't count on that being a persistent issue, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the teams will all solve these problems. This is what they do. That's the whole point of developing a car, is solving the problems, and of course, porpoising being one of the main ones caused by these new regulations. So I'm sure Mercedes have enough smart people working out of Brackley to figure it out. Tom, I'm going to move on to what people are calling like the most competitive car this year, or possibly the fastest car this year, and that is Ferrari. They've looked strong not only in Barcelona, but in this test in Bahrain. They've been always near or top of the timesheets. They've been putting a lot of laps, and they seem very confident in themselves. Like the whole aura around Ferrari right now is like very confident. Do you think that this year may be Ferrari's year, finally, after so many?
It certainly could be. And we saw and we heard last year that they were putting a lot of development resources into 2022. And 2021 was almost taking a back step, if you like. Testing looks good for them. You know, they didn't seem to have any reliability issues. There was one day when they were absolutely pounding in the laps. I think they did 400 and something laps. I could be making those figures completely up, but I seem to remember there being certainly one day where they had done an absolute shed load of laps, where they were just going round and round and round. We didn't hear about them breaking down or having electronic issues or, you know, mechanical issues or, you know, any issues with the hybrid systems. Didn't hear any sort of real complaints from the drivers. Obviously, you know, they might not have said anything, but you'd have heard or you'd have seen if there would have been major issues. They look consistent, they look solid, they look quick. Obviously, you know, testing is always a bit of an unknown quantity, like we said. So we don't know what fuel level they were running. We don't know if they were, you know, if they were doing push laps, if they were doing, you know, sort of like specific race simulations, all the rest of it. But based on what we have seen and the sort of information we can gather from it, there's a good possibility that Ferrari will be right up there. And it would be nice to see them back up there. Hopefully they can try and do it legally this time, unlike 2019.
Yes, good thing. We'll see where the engine regulations come in 2026 if they try anything sneaky there. But Aaron, like we said, like testing is unknown. I think that should be a big thing that we say at the top of this podcast. Like, it's just testing, everyone. It's not you know, guarantee what's actually going to happen next week in Bahrain. But I think one of the most encouraging things about Ferrari that we've seen is that both drivers have been consistently able to do similar lap times in testing. They've always managed to, clearly, whatever programs they're running, both drivers are quite, well, very much able to get to achieve it and get the most out of the car.
Yeah, they've been pretty much up at the top of the timesheets, no matter what run plan they've been on. There's always been a Ferrari towards the top five, maybe fastest or second fastest. And they look generally well-placed to be in the hunt. And they've got two drivers who are chomping at the bit to do it. But it's interesting that they are also playing down the fact that they're fastest. They're like, oh, no, it's just Mercedes playing games. But Ferrari have always been the first ones to try and hype things up and then fall flat on their faces and then get shouted at by the Tifosi. So if they can manage expectations early on, I think they'll put themselves in a stronger position to deal with the pressure. There's none of this, oh, we are coming to win the world championship this year. There's just a little bit of skepticism to what they're doing. But generally across the board, everyone in the paddock has been saying about the Ferrari, it looks good and it seems to be going as well as it looks, which is really positive for Charles and for Carlos. Because in there, they've got a driver who can knock out an ace qualifying lap, but they've also got a driver who can deliver on a Sunday and just get to the flag. I mean, Sainz finished every race last season, and consider how crazy that year was. That's impressive.
Yeah, I've always said that Carlos Sainz is one of the most underrated drivers on the grid. And I think people are starting to realise just how good he is. And maybe if Ferrari are able to deliver the goods this year, which most people seem to think that they will, then maybe he could challenge. But they may have some stiff competition from Red Bull, Jack. They also turned up to Bahrain with some new side pods and a new design to their car. And went pretty much under the radar for the first 2 days until Max Verstappen started setting some quite mean lap times. On the final day. How highly do you rate Red Bull's chances this year?
Very. I think we'd be fools to think they wouldn't be up there. Same as with Mercedes. They haven't really hit any issues. And like you say, when they decided to uncork Max, he was flying. That new sidepod design is quite interesting. We've got a bit more that they are. You see it at the front, leading edge of the floor. The sort of not quite turning vanes, but the sort of guide, the air guides to under the floor are a bit more pointed towards the center of the chassis to try and generate a vortex and then start sealing the floor a bit more efficiently. They're the only team I've seen so far to start actually increasing their ride height, which means that their porpoising issues are being minimized. If they can raise the ride height, then as the downforce builds up, it doesn't get so low to the point that it stalls. It just stays at a flat level. Certainly, they don't seem to be damaging their floor as much as the others, with it actually coming into contact with the road. So they seem to be really getting on top of this as time has gone on. And I think they are in with a very good shout of making a run for it at the certainly opening half of this season.
Yeah, I mean, they are, you know, Max has got a driver's championship behind him now. There's kind of a level that Red Bull want to be achieving. They got the driver's championship last year. They're going to want to go for the constructors this year. And Tom, you know, they, as I said, they kind of just went about their business. They didn't really have any technical issues. Both drivers seem to be getting on fairly well with the car. I mean, we kind of expected Red Bull to maybe not be as competitive because it looked like they threw too many eggs in the 2021 basket. But it does look like they've created somewhat of a competitive, well, very competitive 2022 car.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for them, because they've come into the season with a bit more stability, in the sense that there were never really any question marks around Perez's seat. Or, you know, there are a couple of sort of murmurs here and there, but he more than proved why he's in that second Red Bull seat. So not only that, he's obviously an experienced driver. You know, he's been on, I think this is going to be his 10th or 11th year of the grid. I can't remember when he made his debut. I think 2011. Possibly with McLaren. Or is it Sauber? I can't remember. It doesn't matter. Yeah. So he's been around the block a few times and he's been at different teams. And he obviously gets on well with the team. And yes, he brings sponsorship, but Red Bull have also, you know, brought their own enormous sponsorship in with Oracle signing, that title sponsorship and Bybit or whatever they're called, you know, being plastered all over the car. So the money side does help. But what Perez brings in terms of his knowledge, his experience, and also I think Red Bull have realized that they can't just have a car that's set up purely for Max, because let's be fair, ever since I'd say 2018, that's pretty much what they were doing. And we saw it in abundance with Gasly and with Albon, where they just could not get to grips with the car. Now Perez has got to grips with the car. Excuse me. You know, he put in some storming defensive races, and all the rest of it. So Red Bull have come into this season a bit more settled, on a bit more sort of sure footing. And obviously with Max having the championship, you know, that's going to give them, you know, that's going to give them a sort of natural boost anyway. But they've, they just seem a bit more, I suppose, settled is the word I'd use, because they've been very sort of chop and change recently. And we know how ruthless the Red Bull Driver Academy can be. But this year they're looking good. And when Max started pumping in all those quick laps yesterday or the day before, it was like, okay, they could have something up their sleeve. But again, it's testing, you know, we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. We still very much in the dark. It's only testing really just offers only a very small glimpse of what we might see. So, Aaron, we're going to move on to McLaren. Now, they had a very good time in Barcelona. They looked very solid. People were going, wow, McLaren's quick. They come to Bahrain. Wow, they're still quick. But they can't seem to stop the car now. These their front brakes. They're having some serious issues with it. And it really restricted their running. Never to forget that also the fact that Daniel Ricciardo was not even in the car for any of the 3 days. It's been a bit of a tough week.
Yeah, I think they've described their front brakes as crispy, so which is pretty accurate. That's a pretty major issue, is, you know, overheating front brakes and not being able to stop the car, especially when you've got a guy like Daniel Ricciardo who wants to be driving that car and jumping on the brakes as late as possible. Obviously, it wasn't helpful that Ricciardo was out with COVID, but the fact that Lando did all 3 days actually means they can get, it can work well, but it can also work against them, because having the same driver in means they can get one driver's read on every single change that they're making. And then also the front brakes meant that he got a rest because he wasn't overworked. So they only did 199 laps, which doesn't sound too many, but that's all with one driver, which is plenty. I think they've got a solution coming for Bahrain, and they need to hope that that works. Otherwise, you know, they could lock out the front row and then just have to coast around turn one after the start, which would be quite an interesting way of taking that corner. So it would lead to a very, very exciting first lap, that's for sure. I mean, Barcelona showed that the car handles well, and that's generally a good barometer of how well your car is designed in terms of aerodynamics and general performance. So that all hope isn't lost yet for McLaren. As long as they don't toast their brakes, then they're going to be at least there or thereabouts, top of the midfield, maybe pushing the top three teams, if they're not already one of the top teams on pure pace already. Obviously, they're going to pin all their hopes on Lando next weekend, because Ricciardo coming back from COVID, I don't expect him to perform anything like his best. We don't really know what his symptoms are, as far as I've seen. I don't know if he's asymptomatic or if it's mild or whatever.
I think he's asymptomatic at the moment.
Okay. But still, the general performance level might be lower. And even if he's not there, they could call on Oscar Piastri, which could be quite fun, but he hasn't driven the car. So, you know, it's a bit of a free hit for him, and McLaren maybe get a look at a future driver who could be on the market. It could work out, but all hope's not lost for McLaren. They're looking all right. They've just got to throw some coolness on those brakes.
Yeah, I hope for Daniel Ricciardo's sake that he is all good, and we'll see him on the grid next weekend, not only because I think Ricciardo is a great driver, but also it'll protect the fact that there still won't be a driver younger than me who started a race in Formula One. Oscar Piastri is looking like he's going to be the person to take that from me. But Jack, as Aaron mentioned, like, McLaren seem to have designed a good car. And if this brake upgrade or brake solution that they're shipping for the Grand Prix works, it could make McLaren a bit more competitive. I think the only reason, any doubts that people have about McLaren is mostly because of those front brakes.
Yeah, it's quite a startling issue to have come across. And it was catching a lot of people's attention, because it's normally with that you just open up the ducts and it's fine, but nothing they were seemed to doing with airflow was solving the issue. It's almost like the drum or whatever was hanging on to the heat, it just wasn't exiting through the wheel, so on. They do seem a touch worried. So it is going to be quite interesting to see what happens when we get to next weekend. But yeah, as you say, the car itself does look very solid, very pliable. Maybe not the easiest to drive, as it does seem a bit more clunky in the slower corners. It seems to struggle a bit more than some. But if they can work with a bit of a sprinter, something that they sort of have to push hard to get the best out of, and then try and adjust their race strategies to suit, they might have something that can start challenging to get to the podium a bit more often than they were last year. The only thing that would worry us with that is Ferrari do seem to have taken that step forward. So it just depends, if Mercedes are not as good as they should be, how far back have they gone?
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement. I mean, really can't wait to see what maybe even just free practice is like next week, just to try and figure out some sort of order for these, because if McLaren are able to sort these breaks, just how competitive can they be? Because I think a lot of people after Barcelona were really hyping McLaren and thinking that they could be, you know, on to compete for more podiums and more wins this year. But yeah, no front brakes, and then they may be not finishing quite a few of the races this year. But I'm sure they'll probably get it fixed in the end. So, Tom, we're going to move on to Alpine now. Now, they didn't have a great testing in Barcelona. Their car did, well, just completely give up on them at one point. But they've come to Bahrain. They've had, you know, some running issues. But otherwise, they've generally just been getting on with it and just getting the laps in with Ocon and Alonso. But otherwise, there's nothing really too much to shout about Alpine. You know, we were expecting maybe something a bit more competitive or a bit better showing by now.
Yeah, Alpine, they almost seem like, I don't want to say an unknown quantity, but, you know, it's sort of coming into the season, coming into testing. I'm sure I heard or read a comment. I mean, you know, it's the internet, so take it with a pinch of salt. But it was saying that Alpine were going down the route of they were going to sacrifice reliability in the name of performance. Whether that's actually holding true or not, I don't know. But I hope not, because do you really think Alonso will be happy with that? And do you really think it's part of L plan? I've got to be honest, I didn't actually see much of them in testing, mainly because I didn't actually watch any of the testing live, which doesn't exactly help. You know, aside from Latifi's car bursting into flames, that's legit the only thing I saw live. I mean, it looks like the midfield could be so tightly contested this year anyway. I mean, we say that every year, but this year, you know, if Haas are back on it, you know, if Aston Martin can get back up there, you know, if Williams are back up there, there could be not much difference between the team that finishes fourth and the team that finishes eighth this year. And we could be coming down to these fine margins. And if that Renault power unit in the back of that car is just lacking that bit of HP, especially given we know historically how powerful the Merc units are, you know, the Honda units that are in the Red Bulls and the Ferrari power unit is looking decent this year. If Alpine can't get their package together, you know, they might have a bit of a torrid time. And if that does happen, I wonder if Alonso would sign off from F1 again, because he's not exactly a spring chicken, and he's not going to want to sit around in a car that's going to be towards the back of the grid. Look at his time with McLaren. With regards to the actual team, I don't know. I'd like to see them like right in the midfield, because Alonso, as much as I don't like him, he's a sensational driver, and when he's on it in a race, we all know how good he is. But yeah, I just Alpine are a weird one this year. because after 2020, I thought, you know, when they had that year, their last year as quote unquote Renault. So I just managed to kick one of my caps. You know, they were, you know, I thought they were going to be like doing bits in 2021, but they weren't. I know Ocon won and blah, 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 but you know, they were a bit underwhelming. So I don't know. They're very French about it, aren't they? The only thing you can say is expect the unexpected.
Yeah. yeah. I don't know what to say to that. I mean, Aaron, I think he's right in the fact that we really just don't know. I mean, this midfield can be so hotly contested. You know, Haas have been looking good. We'll get onto them later, as well as AlphaTauri have been looking, you know, fairly good. And Alpine, they're either keeping their cards close to the chest, or they just really don't have anything to show that they're going to be competing near the front of that midfield this year.
I think they're going to be mired in the midfield. Well, I say midfield. I think it's just going to be Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari, and then maybe McLaren somewhere flitting in between the top three and four, and then everybody else. Because like the general midfield is so close, and there doesn't really seem to be any one team that's like massively dropped the ball, hugely off the pace. And perhaps we have to thank that sliding scale of wind tunnel time for sort of balancing that out, giving teams like Haas and Alfa Romeo a little bit more opportunity to test things. And with Alpine, it's difficult to read exactly where they are. I sort of echo Tom's sentiments on it. Ocon was quick on day two in the morning. I think it was fastest of anybody at lunchtime on the second day. And Alonso had a decent day on the final day. Although then I think they had a bit of a glory run because he ended up third fastest. And that was kind of out of nowhere. And I'm not sure how good Alonso's going to look in pink either. A pink Alpine doesn't look quite right.
It's nice to see Racing Point back on the grid, isn't it?
it does very much feel like the Racing Point is back on the grid. It does look strange. But we've only got to put up with it in Bahrain and Jeddah. So yeah. Before it goes
back. Bring back the blue.
Well, it's a blue with a bit of pink. I think at the moment it's pink with blue, and then it's going to just go to blue with pink. So, yeah, I don't know what to say really about Alpine. Nothing sort of really ever jumped out at me during the sort of the last 3 days. So we'll move swiftly on to AlphaTauri, Jack. Another team, you know, Yuki was out there doing laps on the final day. He seemed to be getting pretty comfortable with the car. Same with Pierre Gasly. I think they were just out there just running programs. They weren't really having any problems. I think they got the third over the two tests. I think they got like the third most amount of laps out of all the teams. You know, that's just solid running, isn't it? It's what you'd come to expect from a team like AlphaTauri through testing.
Yeah, just getting that mileage under. They're not going to be expecting to be vaulting up the grid. I think we saw last year that the car was there, but certainly Yuki was maybe letting the side down in terms of consistency. It's getting a bit crashy. So yeah, if they could just focus on getting a consistent point score out of it, then they will massively improve on what they had last year, just by finishing races where they should be, even not chasing that massive that performance gain. So yeah, that's all you can really say from them. They are doing what they need to do. It's a good start. They will always be well supported with that Red Bull connection, as we know. So not really much to add, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know about you, Tom. I'm not really too sure on what to say. I mean, AlphaTauri, they've been chasing that sort of like fifth place in the constructors, trying to get that. You know, I think Franz Tost is very keen on, you know, getting that fifth place in the constructors championship, getting the highest that they've ever been. And you know, we were already talking about earlier just how hotly contested this midfield could be. Is there a chance that AlphaTauri, if they just stay consistent, have Gasly, who we know is a consistent driver, have Yuki settle in a bit better in his second season, start scoring points more consistently. It could be a good route for them to make it to fifth in the constructors.
Yeah, so you know, I think a lot of us think this is going to be Gasly's last year in the AlphaTauri. Where he'll go after that, we don't know. You know, we'll see what happens at some of the top teams, looking at you, Hamilton. It does seem like Tsunoda's more sort of settled in, you know, into the team. Ever since AlphaTauri moved him from Milton Keynes to Faenza last year, he did seem to sort of settle in. And through the second half of the season, he started to have some really, really decent performances. And his final race of the season last year was really good. You know, I think he came fourth or fifth in the AlphaTauri in Abu Dhabi. So hopefully that'll give him some confidence. And hopefully if he just calms down a bit, you know, instead of shouting, effing and blinding over the radio, I know getting caught in the heat at the moment, all the rest of it, but it's not going to do the team any, you know, what it didn't do the team any favors when he was, you know, swearing his head off and saying, no, it's, you know, it's the car's cack, all the rest of it. So, So this is, you know, we've seen good testing from him so far. The car looks solid. It looks like he's taking on a bit more of the Red Bull philosophy as well, because historically the AlphaTauri has usually been a more sort of balanced car, whereas the Red Bull has obviously been, you know, especially since Max has been their main driver, it's been a lot more sort of not delicate, but almost oversteery in the way you have to drive it into the corners, because Max likes to, you know, Max really likes to wring the neck of that car. So it's interesting that AlphaTauri have gone that way a little bit. Obviously, they've still got to have the car sort of set for their drivers, all the rest of it. But it would be nice to see them get fifth, you know, because they've been really sort of punching above their weight recently. And I think if Tsunoda would have scored more points last year, I think they could have finished higher in the championship. So let's just hope for a good year from them and that he can reach the pedals.
Yeah, I will say, like, if anyone who hasn't watched Drive to Survive, Yuki's sort of episode in it is actually probably the one and only highlight I have from it. It's quite good. And I love how Will Buxton explains that. He learned his English on the sidelines from mechanics karting tracks. No wonder he swears so much and he's so vocal with it. But I do love Yuki, and I hope he sticks around for a while. But Aaron, we'll move on to Aston Martin. They've got a beautiful car this year. Just not too sure whether it's all that quick. I mean, they never really showed any signs. They were just kind of just plodding along. I mean, I think on day two, I think it was, they had some sort of glitch. It was either day one or day two. They had some glitch and they lost a lot of running time. I think it was when Vettel was in the car, which is going to set them back a bit. But I don't know. The start of this five-year plan doesn't seem to be all that promising.
Well, the ultimate pace is unknown at the moment, but maybe they were just letting everyone admire their lovely livery by going slowly for us. You know, it is really beautiful. So, yeah. I mean, they got plenty of laps in overall across the 3 days, 339. And that glitch aside, where Seb took his little detour to the outer loop, I mean, maybe he wanted to check that one out as a Sochi replacement. So we'll see. It was fairly serene for Aston Martin. There was only that real issue. No other major problems in terms of reliability that I noted. But again, the big question is simply how fast is it? It's one of those questions. And of course, if they went fast, we could just go, oh, well, it's testing, they're running low fuel and we don't have the full picture. So we're not going to find that out until, you know, next weekend and then maybe the weekend after as well, exactly where everyone's relative pace is to each other. But on the whole, I think Aston Martin look in good shape. They don't seem to be pressing the top guys just yet. I still think they're getting to grips with having all this cash flying around the building and not really knowing what to do with it. and Lawrence Stroll's scripted speeches to try and rally the troops. I'm not sure they'd rally me to do more work, but that's beside the point. They seem like they're going to be sort of where they are from last year. They're in the midfield, maybe pinching a few podiums and high points finishes. But considering they're developing their facilities back at Silverstone, that's not a bad place to be. We've seen teams try to develop their infrastructure and fall down the order. So staying where you are while building, that's still moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I really spotted, Jack, from the Aston Martin is through the slow corners, it did look quite understeery. It did seem to be, I don't want to say like sluggish, but it just did seem to be a bit struggling a little bit. And I'm sure that's something that they'll be keen to just really be hopping on this development race and try and make sure that car is competitive, because the last thing Aston Martin need if the midfield is so close is to be left behind.
Yeah, it's not a great start. It's sort of it seems like we're going to have an Aston underperforming from what you would expect, a bit similar to what we had last year, certainly at the start of this. But as you mentioned, the development is going to be vicious through this year while everyone shakes things out and sees where they what works and what doesn't. I would be surprised if they didn't start copying someone like Ferrari, assuming that worked. We all of a sudden have the green Ferrari rather than the pink Mercedes. It's going to be an interesting one, but yeah, they are somewhat underperforming, and you are onto something with the sluggishness in low speed. I think their car might be a bit on the heavy side, from what I've read, but again, you know, you got to be careful what you take for as read on the internet. But then a lot of teams seem to be running a bit overweight, so we'll see how that one plans out. But yeah, they certainly have a lot of room for improvement if you want to keep this diplomatic.
Yes, we will keep this diplomatic, otherwise I feel like Lawrence Stroll's mafia squad might be onto us if we're not too careful about what we say. So on that note, we'll swiftly move on to Haas, Tom. And you know what? I'm going to say it. Haas don't actually look that bad. I think their gamble in 2021 of not developing their car and then sort of moving it into all their resources into 2022 seems to look like it's paid off. I don't think they're the slowest. From what I've seen, I don't think they're the slowest car on the grid. And they've got rid of one of their main issues, is that they've no longer got Nikita Mazepin and they've brought back Kevin Magnussen. So surely it can't be looking too bad at Haas this season.
Yeah, as I press all the wrong buttons on my mouse. I mean, it's nice to see K-Mac back, isn't it? You know, he's been a proven quantity in that car before. So it'll be good for Haas to have someone who's got experience as well, and proper experience. And I mean racing experience, not bribery experience. Unlike Mazepin. We were talking about this briefly before we went on air, and we were saying that obviously Haas have put a lot of all their development resources into 2022. Last year they put all the resource developments into this year. It looks like it's initially paying off, and especially now that they haven't got those ties to Yurikali and Mazepin and Putin and whoever else, it could actually work out really well for them. K-Mag coming back in can only be a good thing for the team, because we've seen how good he is, apart from, you know, even with that salty tweet from Marcus Ericsson. I don't know if anybody saw that. And then, you know, hopefully Schumacher can learn off K-Mag this year. Maybe not quite teaching Hülkenberg how to suck his balls, but certainly some racecraft, some car development stuff, and also history has taught us. I seem to have said that a lot in this podcast, but we have certainly seen in the past that Schumacher tends to come good in his second season. And in Schumacher, to give Schumacher credit where it is fully deserved, we only had one race last year where we saw him actually legit battling with other people, and that was in Hungary when the order was mixed up. And he was putting in a damn good show in a car that was easily the worst on the grid. So if Schumacher has a better car underneath him, he gets a bit more experience under his belt with an experienced teammate like K-Mag alongside him, it could be good. And I'm relieved for Haas in general as well, because the whole Mazepin thing, I mean, I don't know if anybody listening has seen Drive to Survive and specifically the Haas episode, but the whole aura in the garage, oh my God, it felt horrible. It felt, it legit felt like Mazepin Sr. was sort of like pulling the puppet strings, which is what he was, because he was saying, you know, because all the stuff you're saying about, you know, pulling out his funding if, you know, results didn't improve and convinced his son had a different car. No, mate, he's just shit. You know, so it's hopefully all that sort of, I don't want to sound like all spiritual, but hopefully that sort of bad energy is gone. Having K-Mag back, you know, it's looking promising for Haas. And they had a good testing. I mean, I know they had a couple of reliability issues and they were delayed with their freight arriving, but that was the freight issue was out of their control. Testing, okay, it's not ideal that they saw these issues, but in some ways it's actually good that they saw these issues, because that's what testing is there for. So they can work out these issues, they can work out these weak points. And then, you know, whether it's a manufacturing issue, whether it's a sort of fitment issue, you know, a fundamental design philosophy, they can go from there and potentially fix it. So it's nice to see, you know, it is nice to see them sort of pumping in these quick laps and just the car looking better, the team looking more relaxed, looking more settled, just looking happier. They're just vibing and it's good.
Yeah, that's what F1's all about. It's all about the vibes, and we're liking the vibes that are coming from Haas.
Positive vibes.
But, I mean, Aaron, they had the extra time both on the second and third day, in which they did send both drivers out just to set very fast lap times and go on those glory runs. But I think from what I've read and what I've heard from various other teams, they are genuinely concerned about the potential that Haas have and how, you know, they're not going to jump from last on the grid to getting podiums, but they are being seen as someone who could be a serious challenger in that midfield, someone who maybe nabs that, you know, 10th or 9th place, you know, every few Grand Prix.
Yes, certainly some good news for Haas. You know, they've got rid of Mazepin, you know, they've played a bit of a blinder there, got the extra wind tunnel time, developed the car with his money, and then managed to get rid of him. So, you know, happy days. Yeah, they did go on a couple of glory runs, didn't they, towards the end of days 2 and 3. But why not? You know, that team has had, you know, a bit of a rough few years. Some of it is their own making. I mean, let's be honest, Gene Haas should be putting money in his pocket because he's got it. Not just because he's got it, but it's his team. It's got his name on it. You know, and that is literally his name being dragged through the mud at the back of the grid. So it was good to see them get some the good vibes, as we're now calling them. So, and that's only going to be improved by Kevin Magnussen coming back, and he seems really pleased to be there. The whole mood around Haas has changed. Like, it was all doom and gloom last season. It was, oh, Mazepin this, Mazepin that. They haven't got money. They're not developing the car. Poor Mick Schumacher. I mean, obviously, poor Mick Schumacher, because he had to suffer that car last year. But it looks much more positive now. Even if they still are last, even if they're not as last as they were last year, and I don't think they will be last, because like the McLaren was on track, the Haas car looked pretty quick, pretty decent, and it showed with the times. So there is definite hope for Haas that they can achieve some points finishes this season. And in Kevin Magnussen, they've got someone who can wrestle that car into the points. And, you know, he's got the spicy language to back it up afterwards.
Yes, incredibly spicy. seen in the past, but no, I think it's good news for Haas, and those glory runs and them being so far at the table reminded me of 2018 when when William Story were tweeted during testing that Haas were faster than Red Bull, despite like them just being like maybe like 0.2 faster on like the first day of testing. I was like, you got it. It's just nice to see them back up there. But obviously, it's not going to last long. I don't expect a Haas locking out the second or third row when it comes to the actual race next weekend. But Jack, we'll move on to Williams now. And they have been the team that I would argue have not struggled the most, but they've had the most issues. They've not been able to get the running. The car hasn't been looking the best. And I think it's put a bit of a downer. We're all expecting Williams to really come on this revival, and they've just been hit with so many issues that it now really puts them on the back foot, because they just lost so much time because of all these issues that kept sort of cropping up.
Yeah, it has been a bit worrying. Not only have they had lost all this testing time, but the pace also hasn't been there. I know we can't use times, but they've never. It's not like you can kind of guess, get some sort of indication that Ferrari have always been in the top four, regardless of what they've done. But Williams have just sort of never really had anything to sort of indicate they had good pace in that car. And then, as you say, they have lost an awful lot of time of on-track action just dealing with issues. I mean, hell, the brake fire on in Bahrain, Jos Capito saying that was an issue too stupid to talk about, i.e. a procedural issue, not a component failure. Someone forgot to take a blanking plate out or something like that. And the result of which was pretty catastrophic. Failed suspension and two fried brake and suspension sets, maybe even the motors. So yeah, they are very much on the back foot here. Hopefully it won't last. We don't know how good that the aero concept is long term. What we are seeing though is that people are going to be stuck in it, and they've gone down the Mercedes side of things rather than the Ferrari side. So they've clearly put their eggs on that basket. So they are going to have to hope that it pays out and they can just work these kinks out and make up for the lost time in testing very quickly.
Yes, I'm sure they'll be double, triple checking that they've got everything out of the rear brake ducts before they send it out on track this time. And yeah, it caused a massive fire, which something also did explode. I don't know if anyone watched the footage of it.
I think it was just a tyre failure.
Yeah, it looked quite dramatic when Latifi was trying to put the car out, and then suddenly you just see a big puff of smoke come out the back of the car, and you're thinking, oh dear, what's just exploded? But Tom, yeah, like I think people are really wanting Williams to come back on it. They want them to come back. They want them to just, you know, look good again. We saw so much promise last year, and we thought because, you know, they've still got quite a bit of wind tunnel time, because they finished eighth in the constructors, but it just comes down to their sort of the fundamentals of just how the team is being run and the way that, you know, their car is just being built. And it's sad to say, but Williams could be at the back again, and it's just not a place that we ever really want to see them.
Yeah. I was full of optimism and hope for Williams for this year, but seeing how the others have sort of progressed around them and the sort of... it's just not looking good, I don't think. And, you know, they've got a decent driver lineup, don't get me wrong. You know, Albon is a proven quantity, and Latifi is better than I think he gets recognition for, but I think it could be another tough year for them. I think aside from maybe Alfa Romeo, I think it could be Williams and Alfa at the back. Hopefully not with a huge sort of deficit or void to the midfield, but looking at the progress that Haas have made, for example, I don't think they're going to be that far up the field. Pains me to say it. Especially as a car that's absolutely banging. But yeah, it's all fart and no poo at the minute, that car. You know, it looks good, but it don't go.
Yeah, that's another good way of putting that. Aaron, yeah, I don't know what to say about Alfa Romeo, because they haven't looked terrible, but the reliability issues that they've been having, the amount of glitches that they kept having with their system, which would stop their running prematurely. But the car itself has shown some potential, probably more than I would say Williams at the moment, that it could be still in that midfield race. But at the moment, I'm very confused on where it actually may sit in terms of the actual pecking order.
Well, there's one key thing that we should recognise that is in that car, and that is Valtteri Bottas and all the bad luck that he brings to the team from his time at Mercedes. Because if it can go wrong, it will go wrong for Valtteri. You know, it was a much better test than what they had in Barcelona. I mean, I don't even remember seeing them in Barcelona. Did you see them? So it's just been a bit of a the car looks nice, but it's not been as fruitful as it could potentially have been, because they've just been set back time and again with small problems. And you know, how quick is that car compared to the rest? There are still so many question marks over that. I mean, if they are performing well around Bahrain, are they excelling specifically on the straights? Is the Ferrari power unit as powerful as people think it is? Or are they just very good in the low speed compared to everybody else? So I guess like with all the teams, we'll get some answers as we go through the first few races. But it is very difficult to see where to put Alfa Romeo. I mean, I don't have a huge amount of confidence in them to develop the car particularly well. I think Bottas will guide them. And I'm not sure Guan Yu Zhou is quite Formula One material. I think he's a decent racing driver, but I'm not sure he's quite F1 level. So, you know, with all the bad luck that Bottas is bound to get, you know, and no amount of coffee is going to make that thing go any faster if it's at the back of the grid.
Yeah, I don't know. They may just have to spend a lot more of their money on us and porridge to get him going in the morning. But yeah, like Jack, I mean, we've finally been able to actually properly see the Alfa Romeo for what it is. Of course, they took off that camo livery. They've actually stuck a very nice looking livery on the car with some very nice wheel covers. I don't think this is going under the radar a lot, but the fact that Alfa Romeo have actually chosen to do something with the wheel covers to make them look a bit more interesting is quite nice. But yeah, I mean, what is your assessment of the Alfa Romeo? Like, what do you think that they're doing particularly strongly? Because if they do have the pace, is it a well-designed car? Is it just going to be down to how reliable that thing is? Like, if they're actually going to get any results this year?
Well, one thing I have read on repeat a lot with Alfa Romeo is that they have got on top of pole position quickly. One of few teams to have done so. So if they can rely, it means that they can lean on a balance. Compared to others, we know Bottas is a formidable so yeah, it's fair that he's not my bit, then they might actually have a chance of stuck right at the back.
Uh, Sorry, you kind of cut out for the entirety of what you just said. So we've not heard a word.
Turned into a robot.
So do you mind repeating everything that you've just said?
Yeah, so Jack, unfortunately, you sounded a bit like a stone Dalek.
Great. No, so... Sorry, stone Dalek just done me. we know Bottas is a great qualifier. No doubt about that. If he can start imparting a bit more of that knowledge onto Zhou to try and bring him maybe not up to, well, up a bit into F1 grade material, then their drivers are covered off. Something else I've read a lot is that they have got on top of their porpoising a lot quicker than others. So that is certainly something that they can rely on. If they can lean on a car that has got a bit more fundamental balance than the others, it should mean that certainly in low speed tracks they have a bit more of a competitive package compared to what we've seen so far. But they may have had reliability issues, but this is the time to have those issues. If they persist, then we do have the reason to worry, but right now they might be a bit further up off the back than it seems.
Okay, thank you. Also, note to editor, you're welcome. So we've now gone, I believe, yes, we have now gone through all 10 teams in there. Now, I'm going to ask you to kind of do the impossible right now, guys, and I'm going to ask you what, in your personal opinion, after seeing 6 days of testing and everything that you've seen, read, I want you to give me your top five. Who you think is the fastest, and then giving your top five fastest cars, and who you think out of all the testing. So I'll give you a second to think, about it. But Tom, I'm going to come to you first. So who would be your top five from what you've seen, what you've heard so far?
In order?
In order, please.
What, is in 1 to 5 or 5 to 1?
Can do which order, whichever order you like, whichever you find easiest.
All right, I'm gonna do 5 to 1. I think it'd be fifth quickest this year. I'm gonna say, do you know what? I'm gonna go all out there. Haas gonna be fifth quickest. I'm putting my balls on the line and saying it. Fourth quickest, McLaren. Third quickest, it's gonna ruffle a few feathers, Mercedes. Second quickest, Red Bull. Quickest, Ferrari.
Okay, so we have one precision. Aaron, do you want to also go 5 to 1, or are you going to go 1 to 5?
I was going to join Tom on the Haas good vibes there with P5, but I think AlphaTauri will be up there. I think if Red Bull have got a strong package, then sort of by definition, AlphaTauri generally have a strong package. Then I think McLaren will be fourth. I think Red Bull will end up, I don't think they'll have the third fastest car, but I think they will end up third of that group, just the way the team dynamic is. And then Ferrari, again, second, but not as in they have the second slowest car. Mercedes, top of the bunch, because I just think they have a better balance on things. I think once Mercedes get on top of things, they will be in a very, very good place. But Ferrari are looking incredibly strong. Red Bull look really fast. So it's a lucky dip, whatever order you want in that one. And, you know, heart over head.
Yeah, that's it's always the best way to do it at the moment. Heart over head. Wait till we get some actual running after Bahrain to start making real predictions. But Jack, coming to you, who are your top five?
if I'm going to treat this as if, like, what are the constructors table going to look like after Bahrain? I'm not going to bother doing this for a whole season now. I will go fifth McLaren, fourth AlphaTauri, third Mercedes, second Ferrari, first Red Bull.
Okay. Personally, for me, I'm going to go fifth AlphaTauri, fourth Mercedes, third McLaren, second Ferrari, first Red Bull. I think McLaren will get these brakes issues sorted pretty quick, and I think from there they'll have quite a competitive package. And I think as of now, I think I'm going as it stands like right now. I think Mercedes may be lacking a bit somewhat. So that is my top five. No Haas in there. I would love to get on those good vibes, but I just don't think they're quite there yet. And then just sort of one final question. Who for you has been the standout driver or team that is the sort of the standout for you over these sort of last 2 weeks of testing? We'll go reverse. So, Jack.
I can't really comment on the driver personally, but I would say my standout team is probably Ferrari, having made such a noticeable gain. And it's rare to see that gain be presented so consistently throughout, especially throughout testing. So I don't think anyone's questioning that they have made a massive improvement. Well, maybe not massive, but a significant improvement. They certainly seem to worry the known hierarchy. So, yeah, I'll go with them.
Aaron?
I think you maybe have to give it to Kevin Magnussen or to Lando Norris. Kevin, for being parachuted in sort of last minute. It was only announced that he was driving for Haas on Wednesday, and there he is Thursday in the car. And for Lando, for doing 3 days worth of donkey work while Daniel Ricciardo's in the hotel, not very well. So obviously wishing Daniel Ricciardo the best, but Lando's going to need a good rest before the race next weekend.
And Tom?
For a team, I'm going to say Ferrari. I was going to say Haas, but I'm going to say Ferrari. I'm going to echo pretty much everything that Jack said. And so consistent, such a good improvement in all areas of that car. Looking very, very promising for them. I hope that they can deliver on it. And for a driver, I'm not going to agree with Aaron. I'm going to say Lando, because being parachuted in to do 3 whole days of testing, I cannot begin to imagine how much that would have taken out of him, how knackered he'll have been. So for him to do those 3 days, just, you know, just banging out lap after lap after lap, different runs, different fuel loads, all the rest of it. Especially as it's going to be bloody hot in Bahrain as well. You know, to be in that cockpit for all that time. Yeah, fair play to it.
Yeah, for me, I think my stand-up team is definitely, I'm going to say Haas. I mean, Ferrari have been looking quick, but we kind of all expected Ferrari to be quick, and I think we've really expected Haas to be potentially where they are. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what Haas have to offer this season. I gave them a lot of stick, and I think this podcast in general gave them a lot of stick last year, and I'm just kind of loving what's happened with the team, starting with the fact that Mazepin was kicked out. And I can't wait to see what Kevin Magnussen can do. But yeah, also a big shout out to Lando Norris. I'm sure he'll be taking it easy during free practice on Friday, and Daniel taking a bit more of the reins on that. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what McLaren can do. So that is all from us today. Of course, we are currently live streaming the show. So if you are watching the live stream and you are new, make sure to hit the subscribe button and turn the bell notification to be notified anytime that we go live. We do this with, I think from now on, we're going to be doing this with all of our shows as we head into the 2022 season, starting, of course, tomorrow, actually, if you're watching this now, we'll be live streaming the preview to the 2022 Bahrain Grand Prix, and then from there we'll be doing qualifying and race reviews of every single one of the 23 races that are scheduled. Well, 22 scheduled so far, 23 that will happen though this season. So yeah, if you are new and you want to get all of our content, yeah, just hit that subscribe button and hit the bell notification. We're not only available just on YouTube, but we're also available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Omni Studio, Verbal, as well as the F1 Chronicle website. So just search for the F1 Quid Talk podcast. This is episode 173. So if you are stuck with something to listen to between now and the start of the season, which is only a few days' time, we have a massive back catalogue of shows for you to listen to. One's about testing, one's about talking about the new sporting regulations that are coming, that me and Tom did on our own, or the fireside episode where we talked more of the technical regulations, because this is a big change that's coming for 2022. And as well as that, we have interviews with Mario Zola, the head of Pirelli for Formula One, as well as more documentary style shows about Tyregate, Ayrton Senna, and the 1994 Benetton conspiracy. So feel free to check them out on whichever platform you desire. Also, if you give us a five-star review on iTunes, we will give you the shout-out at the start of our next show. And I believe you can now do it on Spotify as well. So if you do that as well, of course, you'll get shout-out. We also have a Patreon. So if you'd like to support the podcast and help towards better mics, lights, and recording equipment for our hosts, any support is greatly appreciated. And we try to make the show as good for you guys as possible. So now it's on to the plugs. So where can we find the rest of you? Tom, starting with you, where can the lovely people who listen to this find more from you?
So I'm part of everything EF1. You can find us across all your social media platforms, the handle at joinEF1. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I think those are the main ones. We have a website which recently been redone, everythingf1.com. We also have a YouTube channel, which is steadily growing, which is, you guessed it, Everything F1. And our podcast, which is the Everything F1 podcast. We put it out weekly, usually on a Wednesday or a Thursday, depending on when we can record it in the week. That's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, our website, all your favorite podcasting locations.
Nice one. And Aaron?
So I am the host of the Five Red Lights F1 podcast. You can find it on Spreaker, Spotify, Google, Apple, and almost everywhere else. It's also on YouTube, where I've got other F1 videos, such as The Flying Lap, where I review all the action and the headlines quicker than the fastest lap time. I'm on Twitter at @5_red_lights and on Instagram at @5redlights. I have a website, which is fiveredlights.wixsite.com/5RLpodblog, where I write a bunch of F1 articles as I try to become a Formula One journalist.
Nice. And Jack, where can we find more from you?
Should you wish to find out more from me, you can probably best follow me on Twitter at @J_C_Watson. Otherwise, you can find me on the Sportlight website occasionally writing articles, mainly looking into motorsport regulations and history.
God forbid you want to follow me on Twitter, where I'm at the moment just mostly crying about the loss of my football club. You can follow me at @L_G_Edwards. I swear I didn't take the format of my app from Jack. But yeah, if you want to drop me a follow, go for it. Finally, I just want to thank all the guests for joining me today, and we'll be back tomorrow at some time. If you subscribe on YouTube, you'll find out. I think it's 7 o'clock tomorrow for the preview for the Bahrain Grand Prix. The 2022 season is finally back, and I can't wait for it to get started. So thank you all for listening or watching or wherever you're consuming our wonderful podcast. Thank you and goodbye.